Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. But there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Richard DeKayser is here. He's our good friend, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at National City Bank in the Midwestern part of the United States. He's a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and he joins us when in those critical times when we need to talk about what's going on in the economy. And today, this is our FedWatch show we're having. Every 6 weeks or so, the Federal Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve Board meets to discuss a lot of different things, but primarily, what are they going to do with the short-term interest rates that are called the Fed funds rate, the money that banks loan, the money that the Fed loans to banks for overnight deposits. And he's here to talk to us about that. Richard DeKayser, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Jim. Always a pleasure.
It's good to have you back. And fair warning, Richard, and to my audience, I'm going to be on my high horse a little bit today. I'm starting to get a little indignant about, you know, I've kind of been laying back, and I haven't, you know, Richard, as you know, for the last couple of years, the Fed meetings we've gone months and months and months, maybe over a year, where it was almost just of little consequence, right?
Oh, yeah.
And now it's starting to change.
Well, you know, I would argue that we're still in what I call easy territory, or the Fed would use the word accommodative. They've brought the federal funds rate, the overnight rate that banks charge each other for funds, from 1% to this afternoon, I expect it'll be 3%. Historically, that number has averaged about 1 or 2 points over inflation. Inflation's running around 3%, so they're only kind of getting us back to about zero in inflation-adjusted terms, which is below par. So they've been whacking away at this for a long time. They've made a lot of progress, but I think it's important to not to confuse their actions with their consequences. And at this point, it seems like monetary policy, as I would describe it, is still on the slightly easy side. I'm not terribly concerned about the effect these rate hikes are going to have.
Well, from the easy standpoint, you know, I can see where you might say that as an economist. But Richard, if you're out there trying to make payroll in a small business, and you realize that we're in the small business owners live in the world of prime plus, meaning that if prime is going to be 3% today, that means, I'm sorry, if the Fed funds rate is going to be 3% today, that means prime is going to be 6 today. And in the world of prime plus, that means small business owners are paying 7, 8, 9, maybe 10% for short-term interest, and on cars, on computers, on maybe even on some real estate transactions. When you realize that, that's starting to get into our hip pocket a little bit more than I think it ought to be. And you know, the thing that concerns me, Richard, it wouldn't bother me so much if I thought raising interest rates was going to target the thing that the inflationary thing that's the big boogeyman right now. And I don't think it will. I don't think one thing the Fed's going to do today is going to have anything to do with the boogeyman, which is petroleum. Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right. Petroleum is the real culprit. Let me give you a few numbers to put things in perspective. 1 year ago, inflation was running, 1.7, 1.8% year over year. Today, it's 3.1. About half of that increase, that is the move from 1.7 to 3.1% inflation, has been due to energy prices. And I agree, the Federal Reserve's actions are going to have a negligible impact on that. They're of course focused on the other half. That is, after you strip away energy prices, oil and energy and all its other guises, you still see a bit of an inch up from 1.7 to about 2.4%. Now that's not alarming, but you have to remember they were focusing their heavy artillery back in 2003 on focusing on deflation, fighting deflation rather, and that's not really on the radar screen now. They've got inflation really where they'd like it, right in the sweet spot. 2.5%, excluding energy prices, is pretty close to price stability when you factor in all the kinds of mistakes that are known to infiltrate this kind of inflation measure.
And so in anticipation of a 3.5% growth year.
Well, that's right. That's right. And growth should be pretty decent. So I think they'd really like to see the economy pretty much in the zone, that is to say, growing at this 3.5% to 4% pace, inflation hovering around this 2, maybe 2.5% again, core rate. And their concern is that unless they bring interest rates up to a higher level, that they're not going to keep it contained in that zone. You'll have an upside breakout. And then, of course, all the expectations about higher inflation would start to build on themselves. And then you'd have an interest rate scenario that would be even worse, because it wouldn't just be at the short end of the curve. It would be long-term interest rates, and that would take a bigger bite.
Richard, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about the double whammy that small business owners are experiencing because of this policy and because of the high prices of petroleum. We're going to do that right after these messages with our good friend Richard DeKayser. It's 20 till. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Richard DeKayser, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist with National City Bank Corp. And ladies and gentlemen, Rich has been a member of our Brain Trust for a long time and joins us on a regular basis to talk to us about the economy. He's an outstanding student of Federal Reserve Board behavior, and he shares it with us as often as we ask him to. And Richard, on behalf of my audience, I want to thank you for your steadfast support of what we do.
Well, as I said, Jim, it's always a pleasure, but thank you nonetheless.
Okay, small business owners wake up on Monday, Richard, and they say, I got to make payroll this week.
Yep.
But these days, they're waking up with less money, and the reason is because they're paying an exorbitant amount for petroleum at levels that they didn't budget for, so that's cutting into their profits. And now they've got a loan that's going to be renewing, or maybe it's floating with Prime, and so probably by the end of the week they're going to get a message that their interest rates have gone up. Now,
well,
what
right.
we've got here is a double whammy squeeze that has got small business owners right in its crosshairs.
Yeah, it sure does. Now, let me just make one distinction. The Federal Reserve, as they will always say, conducts monetary policy with a long-term view. That is to say, changing interest rates tends to affect. You're right. It does come tomorrow morning. It'll be directly reflected in financing costs, but it tends to ripple its way through the economy over the course of about a year. So they're looking out not to next week or even next month, but this time next year when they're choosing the right level of interest rates. Now, energy prices are another story, and that's a much, much tougher call. I'm surprised they've been as high as they have for as long as they have. But I know that until at least very recently, the thinking at the Federal Reserve was that that would not stand. That is to say that high energy prices would revert to something more normal. If you read the details of the minutes that they publish every 6 or 8 weeks, they talked about one of the supports for consumer spending being a decline in energy prices as you go forward. So when they're doing what they're doing with respect to changing the level of interest rates, they're doing so with their best judgment as to what the world is going to look like 1 and 2 years into the future. And their guess, which I agree with, is that this heavy tax-like effect we're all suffering from due to higher petroleum prices is going to reverse itself. Now, that, of course, could be wrong. And in the event that it's wrong, they reserve the right, of course, to reverse monetary policy. But this is always a probabilistic game. You use your best judgment at any point in time. And the best judgment right now is that this particular thing that's combining with rising interest rates to slow the economy down is going to at least stop increasing and more likely decline. So it's, again,
well, Richard,
with that expectation that they're doing this.
Approximately, I'm going to say 10 months ago on this show, maybe a year ago on this show, you said that you thought that a significant amount of the increase in petroleum, which we were just starting to experience a year ago, was due to speculation, not so much supply and demand. Do you still believe that?
Yes, I do. You know, there are ways you can go about measuring this. There's a group that monitors commodity trades, Commodity Futures Trading Corporation, And you can see what speculators, that is, business people other than businesses engaged in the petroleum business, are doing in terms of buying options and their various kinds of derivatives. And there have been two tremendous spikes in that behavior, one last autumn and again in the month of March when we saw prices rise to their record, new record levels. So I believe that that's an issue influencing prices, and it's not just the speculative activity. There's generally been this increased belief that we're going to run out of the stuff and we're going to run out of it soon, and if you believe that, then your behavior is going to be such as to keep the tank full, right? I mean, if you believe that gas is going to be more expensive next month, you're going to fill up that tank, and that's exactly what we're observing. In fact, on a fundamental basis, there's no shortage of energy in America today. Stockpiles of petroleum, heating oil, gasoline are all above normal in America.
You've noticed that whenever the petroleum goes to a new record level in terms of dollar level, not inflation adjusted, but in dollar terms, whenever it gets to that new record, there's always plenty of oil.
Not always. You know, when we had the record last year, we first saw $40-some a barrel in the summer of last year. We actually had scarcity then. We had short supplies. There were a lot of, you know, mitigating explanations. Hurricanes were a big factor in July and August. And just the surprise in global economic growth. Very few people saw the economy take off globally as it did in 2004. So we really did. If you looked at all of these metrics that I talk about, oil, gasoline, and heating oil, all were well below, actually, their normal levels at that particular time. So I made a prediction at that time that two things would happen. Number one, the fundamentals would improve, supply would improve. That did happen. The other prediction was that oil prices would fall as a result. That didn't happen, which leads me to the conclusion that you do have this speculative interest, and that's a tougher call. Those kinds of developments where there is this emotional component, or what a famous economist once called animal spirits, are, as we remember from 1999 and what was happening with tech stocks,
right.
You know, they can take on a life of their own.
Charles McKay called it the irrational exuberance and the madness of crowds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
what? Yeah, exactly. It's a great book. Okay, folks, Richard, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to get you to give us a little bit of a tour of the economy, which I don't know anybody who can do it better than Richard, folks, in 4 or 5 minutes. We're going to get Richard to give us a tour of the economy, how he thinks things are going, and what is he looking at for the rest of 2005. We're going to be right back with our good friend Richard DeKayser. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Economist with National City Bank. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Richard DeKayser is our guest. Richard, give us the National City website, please.
Very simple, www.nationalcity.com.
1,300 branches around the Midwest?
That's right. We go from Pennsylvania in the east to Indiana and Missouri and Illinois in the west, and from Michigan up north down to Kentucky and Missouri in the south.
All right. And that's National City Bank, ladies and gentlemen. Big SBA lender. Right.
We are the largest SBA lender in the entire area I just described, and number one in most of the states that I just mentioned. So, yes, small business is actually kind of a forte here at National City, and it's something we've been doing for a long time.
Well, we've been working with we were in Washington all last week with the SBA and talking about some of their programs. And so I appreciate you doing a good job supporting small businesses and the SBA programs. Richard, give us your, as only you can do so well in 3 or 4 minutes, give us a tour of the economy, where it is and where you think it's going.
Sure. The economy really started to take off in the second half of 2003 when the war in the Middle East came to a close and all the uncertainty related to that faded from view. We saw growth close to about 5.5% the second half of that year, and it slowed a little bit last year to about 4.5% GDP growth 2004. Now, this year we're off to a start in what I'll call a soft patch, though I wanted to emphasize this is not a bad economy. It is not slow. We saw the first guess at first quarter GDP growth come in last week at 3.1%, And I think we're going to see a comparable print when we get the second quarter results. Now, 3% is about what most folks believe is the economy's long-term potential. And I believe that what we've been talking about all show, the high level of energy prices is the principal factor that's pulled us down from 4 to about a 3% rate of growth. If that reverses, that as we get out of this $50-plus dollar a barrel oil, even into the low 40s by year-end, which is my best bet, that we're going to see this soft patch pass and give way to a stronger economy, not as exuberant as we've seen a year and two ago, but something in the 3.5% to 4% territory, which, again, is pretty good, not superb, but a pretty good economy, I think, something that
especially
we should be grateful
for. Especially when you compare it to the lackluster economy of Europe and the moribund economy of Japan.
Well, that's right. And unfortunately, that's another one of our problems, is that, of course, we'd like to sell into these markets, and we've got a lower exchange rate, which makes our goods relatively less expensive in those markets, and that should be doing wonders for us.
But they're not consuming over there, are they? They're unemployed. They got double-digit unemployment in many of those countries.
Europe on the whole has a jobless rate about twice what we have here in the U.S. Japan's is pretty much on a par with us, but each of them are showing growth rates that are in the vicinity of one-half of our growth rate. And as long as we're growing twice as fast as they are, we will be buying more from them than they will be buying more from us. And that, unfortunately, means that foreign trade continues to be a drag on the U.S. economy, as it has been in the past couple of years, actually.
Do you see the effects of if China decides to cut their currency loose from ours and stop pegging their yuan to the dollar, what do you see that as an impact on the U.S. economy?
Boy, that can only be good, Jim. There's going to be two impacts. Of course, you know, all the cheap things that we like to scoop up when we go to the big box stores, Walmart and so forth, those will be less cheap, and that, of course, will be a concern. But
right.
So many of our businesses locally here are fighting a very tough battle competing with Chinese goods. And part of this is only because, and will continue to be, because labor costs there are so cheap, and that won't change. But if, in fact, the yuan is being held at unrealistically low levels, that is to say, providing Chinese exporters with an advantage in terms of their low exchange rate, that makes the situation all the more difficult. And that's, in fact, something we're experiencing in spades here in the industrial Midwest. So there's a bit of a trade-off. You'll have to pay a little bit more when you go to Sam's Club or any of those discount stores. But the local businesses that fight with those producers will have a better consequence. And on net, I think it'll be good for the U.S.
But with inflation, with petroleum and interest rates going up notwithstanding, you still see a pretty decent year for 05, don't you?
Yeah, that's right, I do. And I'll return to the point I made earlier, which is that interest rates are rising. No one likes that, of course. But I try and remind folks not to lose perspective. You know, if you went back to the second half of the 1990s, the lowest the federal funds rate ever got was 4.75. Mm-hmm. It was only there briefly in the aftermath of the Asian financial crisis.
Right.
Today we're talking about going up to 3 or 4%. At the end of the day, we'll be looking back on interest rates that are still lower than we ever saw in the second half of the 1990s.
And you're predicting that they will raise rates today?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Richard DeKayser, thank you for being here. Good job today.
A pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
We'll see you next time. Richard DeKayser, ladies and gentlemen, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist with National City Bank. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.